Star Wars Action News is brought to you exclusively by Brian's Toys. At briansToys.com, you can find Star Wars toys and collectibles from 1977 to the present. Brian's Toys has it all, from vintage toys and action figures right up to the latest releases. And when checking out, be sure to say you were referred to Brian's Toys by Star Wars Action News. So go check out the world's largest selection of Star Wars toys at briansToys.com.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you frontline reports from the Clone Wars. We are here to bring you recaps and comments on each episode of this new Star Wars adventure. This week, Season 2, Episodes 9 and 10, Grievous Intrigue and The Deserter.
Hello everyone, welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network. I'm Jerry, here to bring you the latest news from the front lines of the Clone Wars. This week, we've got not one, but two episodes of Clone Wars, episodes 9 and 10, Grievous Intrigue and The Deserter. Let's get started with this week's episode summaries. Grievous Intrigue is the season 2 debut of everyone's favorite four-armed mechanical menace, General Grievous. Oh, Grievous Intrigue. I get it now. The newsreel kicks us off with some information of Separatist victories.
The Jedi have been unable to stop Separatist advances in the Outer Rim.
We start off with the General and several commando droids getting ready to board Master Eeth Koth's cruiser. The droids make short work of the clones, and with the support of Magnet Guard droids, Grievous easily defeats Master Koth. But you gotta hand it to Eeth Koth. He held his own pretty well, he was just simply outnumbered. Grievous contacts the Jedi Council via hologram and taunts them with his victory over Koth. We get a lot of insight in this episode to Grievous and his true intentions of fighting this war.
To see you die!
Plo Koon's clone officer, Commander Wolf, picks up on a message that Eeth Koth is delivering through hand gestures. Obi-Wan gives us the interpretation.
I admit my skills are rusty, but Salukami System, Sector J...
Anakin Skywalker and Adia Gallia to the rescue. The plan is that General Kenobi and his fleet will engage with Grievous, and that Obi-Wan will use himself as bait.
Not to worry, the good General and I have a history. I'm sure he'll want to even the score face to face.
Once Grievous is aboard Obi-Wan's ship, Anakin, Adia Gallia, and Rex will enter out of lightspeed near Grievous' ship. They will dock and rescue Master Koth. When Obi-Wan's fleet appears, General Grievous is hardly surprised they've arrived.
You see, your compassionate friends have come to rescue you, just as I knew they would.
General Grievous orders his droids to lock a tractor beam onto Obi-Wan's ship and begins to pull him in so that he can prepare to board. Obi-Wan and Commander Cody are all set to receive the boarding party. Again, commando droids and Magna Guards push their way into the ship, and Obi-Wan faces being outnumbered as well. He, however, defeats the Magna Guards, but quickly finds himself in a furious battle with General Grievous.
What have you to show for all your power? What have you to gain?
The future. A future where there are no Jedi.
Anakin, meanwhile, appears out of hyperspace right up against the General's ship.
How close are you going to jump in next to Grievous' ship?
Pretty close.
Anakin and Gallia quickly make their way to the bridge, but only to find that they were expected. A contingent of commando droids are awaiting them as the tactical droid, TV-94, threatens to kill Koth if they don't surrender. Anakin uses the Force to rip off TV-94's arm as it contains the button that activates the electrical surges that threaten Master Koth. After defeating the commando droids, they are successful in rescuing Master Koth.
I see you got my message.
Obi-Wan finally gets the upper hand on Grievous after a few near misses that leaves his general scurrying away on all six limbs. With Grievous heading back to his ship, Gallia splits away to intercept while Anakin focuses on getting Koth back to the escape shuttle. Obi-Wan, Cody, and Adia Gallia find themselves stuck in the airlock between the two ships as General Grievous orders the Republic ship destroyed.
Open fire on the Republic ship! Target their engines!
But sir, the ships are still attached!
It doesn't matter! Prepare all troops for our landing on Salukami!
The Jedi and the clones manage to safely get to Grievous' side of the ship, as their vessel is lost. Anakin brings his shuttle back around to pick him up, but Grievous' ship is disabled as well, which leads them all to take escape pods down to the surface of Salukami. The Jedi return to their flagship and prepare to follow Grievous planetside, which takes us to the second episode from this evening, Episode 10, The Deserter. The newsreel takes us to General Kenobi leading a squadron of clones to the planet's surface.
As General Kenobi leads a squadron of clone troopers and closes in.
We see Grievous coming out of a downed escape pod, only to find his transmitter not working. Seeing the Republic on their way, they take off to find the only other escape pod that survived in hopes that its transmitter is working. Riding atop a Reek, Grievous has a long trip ahead of him considering that all of his battle droids badly need recharging.
How could your power cells be so depleted?
You would not let us ride on one of those creatures with you, sir.
Obi-Wan finds the wreckage of a Separatist ship and splits up two teams to go search for Grievous. Wreck takes off with one team and Cody and Obi-Wan leads the other. Rex and his team are riding along on speeder bikes when a commando sniper picks him off. Rex is badly wounded, but Kix wants to get him under shelter to properly tend to his wounds. They find some farmland and are met at gunpoint by Sue, a pink Twi'lek. Reluctantly, she allows them to stay in the barn. Upon further inspection, Kix tells Rex that he is in no condition to proceed, but he will heal with time.
Sir, as the team medic, when it comes to the health of the men, including you, I outrank everyone.
Sue brings the clone some food, and we learn something very interesting from her daughter.
You look like my daddy.
Meanwhile, Obi-Wan finds Grievous's escape pod and concludes that he must have headed west to another pod. He radios for Rex, but gets another clone instead. The clones are ordered to rendezvous with Obi-Wan at the other escape pod's location. Back at the homestead, Rex is awakened by noisy animals, but is also alerted to an intruder who turns out to be Sue's husband. He also turns out to be a clone. Rex is welcomed to dinner at the home and even engages in a friendly game of Djarik. After some back and forth and philosophical debates about duty, family, individuality, and a life dedicated to war, they just have to agree to disagree. Then Cut gives his children some permission to play out and back, and in doing so, the kids find an escape pod that is filled with 20 commando droids. These droids look to infiltrate the homestead, leaving Cut no choice but to defend his home. He sends Rex upstairs with the family.
Rex, I need you to be the last line of defense for my family.
Cut is actually successful in taking out most of the droids, but gets trapped under some fallen beams from the house. He calls upon Rex to be ready for the intruders, and the two clones are successful in protecting the farmhouse. Rex is well enough to leave the next morning, and emphasizes that it is his duty to report the deserter.
But in my condition, I probably won't remember any of this.
The episode ends with a brief battle in which the Republic is trying to blast Grievous's escape shuttle out of the sky, preventing him from getting off planet. The shuttle is unable to land, which leaves Grievous to have to fire a cable towards it. He is successful and then flies away safely.
Oh, we're right back where we started.
Yes, you are, Obi-Wan. Yes, you are. Now let's get into this week's roundtable discussion. All right, everybody. Welcome to the Republic Forces Radio Network roundtable discussion. We have a double dose after being off for 2 weeks. Cartoon Network has given us a Christmas / New Year's present of 2 episodes, but perhaps there might be a drought in our future, and maybe we'll talk that later. But hey, we've got a full house to discuss 2 episodes. Maybe we have double the number of participants for double the number of episodes. So hey, let's just go down the list, introduce yourselves, and give us your top line thoughts about this week's episodes. Glenn, why don't you get us started?
I'm Glenn Dooku on the forums, and I very much like these 2 episodes. Except the fact that all the Jedi seem to have lived. But other than that, I thought they were very good. The animation was just spectacular. I was watching more closely on HD, and it was just, the detail is just amazing. I'm just looking forward to what they keep doing.
Okay, Dave?
Hey, it's Dave here, Darth Opressa on the chat. And I really enjoyed both of these episodes. I think I liked the second one more, just because it had more of a psychological meaning to it. But the first one was really good action, really good sword fight, lightsaber fighting, a lot of good space battles. And the animation in the first one was just amazing, particularly for the first 5 minutes with Eeth Koth.
Okay, Nathan P.
Hi, I'm Nathan P. Butler, the EU guy for Star Wars Action News and the Star Wars Action News Book Club podcast. I really, really enjoyed these episodes. I think the series is getting better and better. There are continuity issues that this episode brings up that kind of has me and some other fans pulling our hair out, but from just a straight enjoyment standpoint, these are some of the better ones that we've seen, right in keeping with the rest of Season 2, it seems.
All right, Jason.
Hey, this is Jason, Darth Prime, Venganza Media web programmer for hire. I guess since 2009 closed out really strong with the Clone Wars, I was really expecting to see something special with Grievous when 2010 kicked off. While I don't really think that came to pass, what this 2-4 shot did and what was really unexpected and enjoyable was some of the great characterizations of the clones that we got later on in that second half. So while I didn't get what I was expecting, I did find some really good stuff I wasn't. So the first half I thought was a letdown, but the second half really pulled it off for me.
Okay, Brock.
This is Brock, Star Wars Action News Book Club Liaison. I'm the book guy, if Nathan's the EU guy.
And I, too, enjoyed both these episodes. I liked the first one a little more than the second one, although I did enjoy that they actually gave some characterization to some of these characters. That was nice work there, and I have to concur. I thought some of the animation we saw, and especially in the first 5 minutes with that battle with the angles and the lighting, was great. So I also had a good time with these episodes, and it was a nice breath of fresh air to see that.
Okay, Barrett?
Hey, everybody. This is Barrett, Master Collect-Em-All from the forums. It's good to be back after a nice long break. I really enjoyed both of these episodes. I think somebody mentioned on the podcast, the Roundtable, a couple podcasts ago that they've really crossed the line, you know, got the animation correct. I mean, I don't think that we've really had any problems with the animation in the last few podcasts, just maybe with the story, but I really enjoyed the contrast of the stories, one being action-packed and the other one being more of a character-fleshing-out story. So, you know, I really enjoyed both episodes a lot.
Okay, Arnie?
You know, some of the other people on this call here have mentioned how 2009 ended on a real high note with Brain Invaders, and I agree with that. I thought these episodes were par. You know, they didn't do great. I didn't, you know, it was an infield double. It wasn't, you know, a strikeout. It wasn't a home run. Overall, I was entertained, but not enthralled.
Okay, and I'm Jerry Bounty on the Star Wars Action News forums, and I actually enjoyed both these episodes very much, and, you know, at first, I thought the second episode was sort of the downer, but then I found myself really enjoying kind of where they went with the episode. I didn't expect it, but it was a pleasant delight for me, and I actually ended up liking both these episodes, and, you know, I didn't really think, at least with the first episode, that too much new was brought to the table, but at the same time, I think they did a good job with them. Okay, that being said, let's jump into some of the points of the episodes tonight. I wanted to start off with General Grievous, because this is his season two debut, and, you know, based on what the taste we had in our mouths with Grievous from season one, what'd you guys think about General Grievous with his debut?
I think having him show up for the first time in not only over a year, but over 20 episodes, it was a really good way to bring him back. I mean, his introduction to the series was him just kicking butt. He breaks down the door with like 5 or 6 commando droids and just takes everybody down. And for both episodes, he's near untouchable. There were a few moments where you saw the Grievous from the first season where he was just kind of the typical villain. But for the majority of the time, he was amazing. It was great to see him again.
You know, I love the fact that both times, or all three times when he actually entered the ship, they had those commander droids come in first, and then the mando droids follow in, and then he comes in. I didn't think he kicked ass. I think his people did, and I thought that was really kind of cool that he has that standard way to do things. I honestly, my big problem with General Grievous is that, just like in the movie, he's a waste. So even though I like the idea that they brought him in here, and I thought that if they're going to use him, I guess it's a good way to use him here, but I just really feel this character has never really gotten any of the potential that we ever thought he did. So watching him here, he did feel like a typical villain to me anyway. Was it really fun to watch him this time fight Obi-Wan with the two lightsabers and the whole thing with the sloping, trying to escape? Yeah, that was interesting to watch for this episode, but overall, I'm always unsatisfied when he's around, and that didn't change for these episodes at all.
I share your pain, Brock, and I've come to the realization with this episode that the kick butt, take no prisoners, Grievous from the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars microseries, that's just a fluke. That is not the Grievous that is meant to be. We are instead getting the cowardly Grievous of Revenge of the Sith, the one who has a couple good fight scenes, but who only strives to slink away at the end with his tail in between his legs. And it was really disappointing. It's fun to watch him, you know, fight four-handed lightsaber combat. I mean, it's fun to watch, but there's no real menace to him anymore. And even when he was fighting Eli Koff, I mean, he had to have the Magna droids kind of box him in so he could limit the combat field. And I just think that's all disappointing. It just continues to chip away at what I was hoping was going to be, you know, some really cool stuff with him. But the one thing that I did take away from this episode that's a plus for Grievous was that they were starting to get into some of his characterization with the banter between Obi-Wan and Grievous, when getting to the point of what does Grievous want, insight into, you know, what does he have to show for what he wants, you know, just his mutilated body and what does he live for, that he lives just to kill the Jedi. And I thought that was kind of neat, starting to get some insight there to peel back his mask, so to speak. But other than that, he's just starting to wear on me. And granted, it's a kid's show, you're going to have the Skeletor type villain, you know, who escapes, the Cobra Commander who escapes. But I just think I wanted more, and I realized today that we're just not going to get it.
I just don't understand why Cad Bane can execute a plot very well and sometimes win, sometimes lose, but Grievous can't plan his way out of a paper bag. I also, really, it annoys me that he keeps having all these lightsaber fights with Obi-Wan, and including a four-armed lightsaber fights in Revenge of the Sith. You know, he's blathering on and on. I was trained in your Jedi arts by Count Dooku. Obviously, Obi-Wan knows this by now.
Yeah, I caught that too. It kind of dilutes the whole Revenge of the Sith scene, but then again, that came first.
Yeah, and he winds up, from a continuity standpoint, for Grievous himself, it's not so much two steps forward, one step back, or one step forward, two steps back. I don't feel like we're really gaining or losing ground here, but it's like every time they try to add to the character here and do something good with the character, we lose something elsewhere. Like, we've got this idea now that Grievous is there just to kill the Jedi. That's what he wants, which was that background that kind of got delved into in Lair of Grievous, kind of got delved into when Target put up a background of the character on their website that freaked people out because it had nothing to do with his previously existing background. But at the same time that they're adding that, which is taking away from what Grievous was before, we also have sort of this idea that he sees at least some pride, one way or another, in controlling the largest droid army that the galaxy has ever seen. Granted, it's droids, but at least it's a giant army to go with his sort of warlord-style background. So it's odd. It's like, it's just like with Lair of Grievous, where it was sort of pulling in different directions continuity-wise, kind of new versus old. His appearances still tend to do that, while I agree with Arnie, weakening his perception as a villain in Revenge of the Sith. I love the fact that not only, as it was mentioned, not only did he surround Eeth Koth when they were battling with the Magna Guards, you notice he also used them to weaken his opponents, not just as a way of kind of keeping the fight together like people circling in a schoolyard, but he used them to weaken him, which again goes to show that maybe he's a tactician when it comes to his use of droids, but in and of himself, he's not the great warrior he tries to be, which plays into Revenge of the Sith, but not the other EU.
I actually think there's some consistency here, at least in the first episode with Grievous versus the one we see in the movies. Obviously not the banter, but in Revenge of the Sith, I didn't really feel like Grievous was ever this, you know, unstoppable force. I mean, the very first time we see him engage in the battles on the bridge, and Anakin and Obi-Wan pretty much send him running off. Obi-Wan defeats him later. And I think in this first episode, what I kind of like, though, is that, no, his reputation against the Jedi had nothing to do with his ability to just go one-on-one with them and defeat them at their own game. But Eeth Koth, I mean, Eeth Koth didn't have a chance. He just, it was essentially, I don't know what the number was, but he was fighting 6-1. And I think that is part of what makes Grievous such a threat, is that, no, he doesn't fight fair. Now, I think in the second part, though, I think he was just as worthless as he was in the first season, though, because he did nothing that made you think he was a threat. He just got away.
I want to say that, in addition, you know, we have this thing that Grievous is now, is really wants to see the end of the Jedi. And hopefully at some point we'll delve more into that. Did the Jedi do something to him, like his loved one or something like that, that has made him decide to have these enhancements, which of course goes against the previous EU, but we've already sort of, I guess, over that in that layer of Grievous, that he wants these enhancements, and he wants these enhancements so he can go after the Jedi and kill them. But of course, the question is, if he wants to go after these Jedi and kill them, why did he not kill the Jedi that he had? You know, once the Republic jumped into the system, he should have killed Eeth Koth. I mean, why keep him alive after that? They've sort of drawn the, you know, the Republic into his trap where he expects that. If Eeth Koth is already dead, and, you know, Aayta Gallia and Anakin come into the room, and Eeth Koth's dead body is there, and it's like, ha-ha, dead already, you know? That was a bit, and Dave Filoni gave a very bad reason for not killing him off.
I kind of got a different take on General Grievous. I always had an issue with, you know, him being wasted, kind of like what you said. Now that it was explained that, you know, he wants the end of the Jedi, that's why he's in the war. So I kind of went back and did some history on him, and it's because, from what I can tell why he hates the Jedi, it's because Dooku made him believe that the Jedi were responsible for him being blown up in the shuttle. And so with that knowledge, I can kind of, you know, take it why he wants the Jedi to be taken care of. But this, you know, when he's supposed to be this master strategist, but it seems like this, he was only trying to make trouble for the Jedi. He says that he doesn't, you know, he's not interested in politics. The Grievous that we've kind of seen before was kind of taking direction from Dooku. And it just seems like this was kind of like the old Batman, where the Joker really is not robbing a bank. He just wants to kill Batman, you know, and it kind of goes into how it's a kid show. And, you know, they can't all be, you know, taking down the Star Destroyers. But that's kind of how I got how he was kind of being portrayed in the first episode. In the second episode, I really liked the banter he had with the droids. I mean, the droids seem to be a character that I should not like. You know, they're kind of moronic. One thing that the droids that I really like about the droids is that they really seem to have a self-preservation mode that the clones don't. I mean, you tell a droid, you know, go over there and attack the Jedi, and they're like, Jedi, you know, you want me to go over the Jedi? And, you know, you tell a clone, you know, attack those droids, and they're like, for the Republic! So I think that's a pretty good contrast that they showed, especially when Obi-Wan says to Grievous that you have a soulless army. You know, what's good of you being in control of this soulless army? And it almost seems like the droids don't really want to die, and the clones, you know, will give their life. You know, that's kind of how I got to take out of this.
If I can be geeky for a moment on, you know, a Star Wars podcast of all things, a friend of mine who's a computer programmer, not a huge Star Wars fan, but likes the movies well enough, would never watch a cartoon on it, was really upset because he wants to know who would program cowardly and sarcastic droids. Exactly what point at programming that algorithm do you decide to add in a sarcastic subroutine?
Except that is dealt with. Continuity-wise, that's been dealt with. The Clone Wars Season 1 guide goes into great detail, well, not great detail, some detail in how these droids were originally meant to be controlled the way they were in Episode 1, controlled by a droid control ship. Only because they now have been pressed into service with independent processing, trying to get them away, sort of being refit, a lot of the ones that had been in service for a while, at least, you know, we're talking like Naboo-type era, perhaps, some of these ones that have been in service for a while are sort of being pushed to their limits, and their processors are essentially breaking down. There's data corruption, which is causing essentially personality change, as if someone, you know, was undergoing some type of brain trauma causing a personality change. So they've dealt with it. I think it was more just a retcon to try to explain it, but at least it has been dealt with in continuity now.
It reeks of BS to me, but thanks for the explanation anyway.
Isn't that way? Somebody said that recently, isn't it?
That was me.
Yeah, yeah. A retcon is just basically institutionalized BS or something like that. Yeah, kind of.
Well, and you know, I think it was interesting that Grievous, at least we are getting hints of motives, and hopefully they're dug a little bit into the next level. We now know that, yep, he's really just out to get the Jedi. You know, hopefully we'll figure out more. Moving on to the Jedi a little bit. What did you think about the Jedi in this episode, just in terms of their planning, their scheming, and just the fact that they did allow General Grievous to escape? A lot of that kind of bothered me a little bit. What do you guys think?
On the one hand, I'm glad that they let Grievous escape, because as frustrated as I am by them letting everybody escape, I'm even more frustrated by them capturing them for a little bit and then having them escape out of an even worse situation. But as far as the Jedi go, my biggest issue with the Jedi here was, you know, we got the opening scene with Yoda and everybody standing around, and it's like everybody just volunteers. I'll go. Me too. Do you not have assignments? Was there a lull in the war? People just extra lying around? And the other thing is, I really just felt Eeth Koth should have died. He really should have died. He was a Jedi Master, and Obi-Wan is not on the council. Eeth Koth is. Am I right in that? That's what he said, I thought.
Eeth Koth is... apparently he's back to being a member of the council. He was a member of the council in episode 2. He's not one by episode 3. He was supposed to be dead, and now he's back, which we can get into momentarily.
But I think Eeth Koth should have died, and since Obi-Wan isn't on the council, assuming that rank somewhere means skill, I think that Obi-Wan should have had a much harder time fighting Grievous and his droids, since Eeth Koth was taken down pretty easily. Those were my Jedi.
My problem with this episode was I wasn't even sure if that was Adi Gallia or Stassa Lee until he finally said Master Gallia, whenever, like, really deep into the episode. So the whole time I'm scratching my head wondering who it was. And on top of that, I was like, well, it can't be Adi Gallia. Well, maybe this is where she dies, and this and that's and that. So I couldn't get past that. I also like that Ahsoka wasn't involved in this one, just because it seemed like the missions involved, they wouldn't bring her on, or if they did, they wouldn't give her the big thing to do. So thankfully, they left her out of this one, because it wouldn't make much sense. But then I totally agree with Arnie. I think someone had it going this one, and they just didn't do it.
It would have given Grievous that menace had Eeth Koth died that I hadn't wanted for. But you mentioned planning, and I'm thinking, what was the plan? It seemed like throughout this episode, they were trying to have this plan to capture Grievous, but it was never really fleshed out what it was or how it was going to work. And that just left me scratching my head half the time. And the Jedi, I mean, Obi-Wan seemed to be channeling a little bit of Anakin in this one, especially in that wanting to continue to go after Grievous as he's going up the boarding tunnel, and just showing that impatience and maybe not recklessness, but maybe not bloodthirsty is not the right word, but definitely some frustration and determination and impatience that we haven't seen in Obi-Wan. And even at the end of the second part, where he's all disappointed when he gets away and he's like just basically beside himself grumbling, oh, you better tell the shuttle to pick us up too. You know, he was definitely showing a little bit, dark side isn't the right word, but he was definitely showing a different side that we haven't seen of him before.
He's been watching the series with us and agrees the bad guys just escape while shaking their fist all too often.
I agree. Dark side is not the word, but determination. You know, I like seeing that in Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi is the hero. I like, you know, this is the guy that took out Darth Maul. You know what I mean? His master couldn't take out Darth Maul. This is the guy that went in there and took out a Sith Lord as a Padawan. You know, this is the guy who's training, quote-unquote, the Chosen One. And I like to see Obi-Wan Kenobi kick butt, you know, for him to show, to prove why he's the one training the Chosen One. You know, this guy can kick butt. You know, I like seeing the determination. He has a history with Grievous. He wants this war to be over. You know, he's going after him. But on the other side, when Master Galea said, patience, you know, we need to get off this ship. You know, Obi-Wan shows that he's not exactly like Anakin, that it is not the dark side, that it is just determination, because he is able to step back and calm himself and get his bearings and make the right decision. But I really like seeing Obi-Wan going after Grievous in these episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of attachment there more so than dark side, because I think he's attached to the fact that this is my goal and this is my mission. I've been close to him so many times, but he was easy to snap out of it. I think it was Adia Gallia who just said, hey, you know, Obi-Wan, relax. And he's like, okay, you're right. Let's just you know, stick to the plan, or whatever his reaction was. So I think it was kind of good to see that, yep, you know, one thing that we're seeing with the Jedi here is they're starting to lose themselves in this battle, in this war. And I think it was kind of cool to see that, yep, even Obi-Wan has that moment of weakness.
Wait a minute. Before you move on there, Obi-Wan showed that moment of weakness when he killed Darth Maul. I don't want to get into episode one here too much, but Barrent, the guy was dancing behind that field waiting to get a piece of Maul. That's emotions taking over. That's the first step towards – he used the dark side necessarily, but he certainly wasn't on the light side completely when he was going after Maul there. So we've seen that from him before. That is not new here, and – it's a dance that he's been doing before. That's all I'm going to say about
that. Correct. And I like seeing that dance. I like the cha-cha, but I like seeing Obi-Wan do the dance. You know, he in fairness, he was a Padawan when he let that take him over. And, you know, here he is a Jedi Knight, a Jedi Master. So I like seeing him seeing the dance. You know, I like Obi-Wan showing why he is, you know, why he's able to train Anakin. So that was just my point there.
The thing I didn't get in this great plan that the Jedi had, in terms of, you know, acting like they're sort of weakened so that Grievous will try to board them and get Grievous aboard their ship, is it looked like you had like sort of four or five, I don't know, maybe ten clones plus Obi-Wan there to try to capture Grievous, and then Grievous quickly dispatched all the clones, so it was just Obi-Wan against Grievous. It's like, what was their plan for, like, actually capturing Grievous? That Obi-Wan has to defeat him in lightsaber battle? I mean, you'd think you'd have some sort of electrical thing or some sort of contraption to catch him. I mean, you're bringing him onto your home ground, and the best you can do is have one Jedi with, like, no reinforcements to defeat him. And while you're sent two, I mean, I understand sending two Jedi onto the, you know, the enemy ship to try to free this one other Jedi, although they didn't seem to care about all the clones that they lost. But you only have one Jedi trying to defeat Grievous, and no way of sort of containing him or capturing him. Seemed kind of weak in that regard.
Yeah, they say that, well, at least we're all still alive, right after a whole bunch of clones get, like, blasted out into space. So apparently the clones don't count for that one. I think their plan, though, for capturing Grievous, they were going to get him and tie him together with Cad Bane and Zero the Hutt and make them pole vault. With regard, though, to the Jedi, two quick points before I drop the whole Jedi thing on my side of things. I, too, was thinking that it looked like Stas Ali initially, had they not mentioned Adi Gallia in the episode, and I think there were some tweets about it using Adi Gallia's name. But I was kind of impressed that they thought to use Adi Gallia instead of using Stas Ali, because Adi Gallia is not supposed to die until the Obsession comics, which is also when Asajj Ventress leaves the Clone Wars entirely, right up very close to the end of the period between the two films, between 2 and 3. So it was nice to see that they at least have Adi Gallia in there and alive instead of Stas Ali, who they could have used incorrectly, kind of the antithesis of how they were dealing with Eeth Koth. And as far as Obi-Wan and Grievous's relationship goes, the one thing I'm waiting for is for them to explain the background a little bit more between the two of them outside of the Clone Wars, if there is any. Although, what I dread is that eventually we're going to have a Obi-Wan out there referring to Grievous as my darling, at which point I may stop watching.
Now, Nathan, this might be a good time. Can you give us a little bit of the background on Eeth Koth and why this show is a little bit problematic for some of the Expand Universe out there?
Sure. Basically, Eeth Koth and several other characters have disappeared by the time of Episode 3. Between 2 and 3, the Jedi Council changes, just like between 1 and 2. And every time that happened, they basically let the EU writers create some reason for those characters to be gone, usually by killing them, blowing them up, you know, something like that. Yaddle, Yar-El Poof, who has the funniest name in Star Wars, and Eeth Koth was one of them, because in Episode 3, Aegon Kolar is in his Jedi Council seat. And what they had done was, at one point, just kind of in a throwaway reference, they did a book called Inside the Worlds of Star Wars Attack of the Clones, and mentioned the fact that he and another Jedi, ironically, Sora Bulk, both die in this gunship crash. And after that, they had actually had some appearances of a character that looks like Eeth Koth, like in the Genndy Tartakovsky micro series. And they actually went back and retconned and said, no, he looks like Eeth Koth, but that was really meant to be Aegon Kolar, because Eeth Koth was supposed to be dead. So they've already done retcons to make sure he stayed dead, as of that book saying that at Geonosis he dies in a gunship crash. Now, since we don't see it happen on screen, he's been able to be brought back. We still don't know why it is that Aegon Kolar is in the seat in Episode 3. Now there's a question that they may re-retcon, or just, is it con if you undo a retcon? They may go back and change things so that all those appearances of someone looking like Eeth Koth that was said to not be Eeth Koth may not be Eeth Koth again. We're not really certain exactly how that's going to work. I think Leland Chee is going to have a heck of a time trying to figure that one out. Coincidentally, tying into the whole Eeth Koth thing, in the gunship, when he supposedly crashed and died, was another Jedi, Sora Bulk. And in the hologram briefing scene, we see a Weequay Jedi. And there was a Weequay Jedi, Sora Bulk, seen in the background of Episode 2, who supposedly died in that crash, but was presumed dead because Jon Ostrander brought him back later for the Jedi Mace Windu comic. And he becomes a big dark Jedi on Dooku's side character in the comics set between Episodes 2 and 3. Well, apparently in the design sketches for this Weequay Jedi, who couldn't continuity-wise be Sora Bulk, the design name was Sora Bulk. So now Leland Chee is having a heck of a time. I've already, you know, seen some of his tweets about it, trying to figure out, should this be Sora Bulk? If so, how does he go to the dark side? If so, why is he still a Jedi? Because he was supposed to be the first dark Jedi they saw, not Ventress. All this craziness because of one side character and one Jedi Council member, both of whom supposedly died years ago when they wrote the Inside Episode 2 book. So we're once again seeing continuity sort of being reshaped and tweaked, only in this case it's not nearly as bad as some of the stuff with, say, Grievous or Ahsoka being there. But it kind of goes to show that characters that are worthwhile to bring into the series may or may not fit the way the continuity runs. Same thing with Commander Wolf, if we have time to get into him later.
Now, I guess it probably is worth saying, though, that if something's not happening on screen, and I mean from a movie perspective, or if it's happening off screen from the movies, and then it shows up here, Lucas considers this true part of continuity, because I guess it's part of what he's involved in. So if there's a guidebook or something that says so-and-so got killed, it's probably okay to just say, okay, that was a guidebook written X number of years ago. This is what we've got going on now. Now, Glenn, I knew you had a thought on that. Why don't you share that with us?
Okay, they had the big commentary on StarWars.com was Dave Filoni talking about using Eeth Koth, and they looked at all these sources and everything. They said, well, he's supposed to have died in a gunship, but you know, there's no real story of him dying. There's no real usage. And, of course, they wanted to say, hey, George, can we use Eeth Koth? And George says yes, because George Lucas, as I haven't mentioned yet before, but I was going to mention on the forum soon, is George Lucas doesn't care about continuity. So George, of course, says, yeah, you want this character? He's cool. Yeah, use him. That's fine. So they decided to use Eeth Koth. And the really weird thing, though, is I thought, oh, this is really great. They got Eeth Koth and Attic Galia, because you have sort of four characters for the price of two, because you have these two characters that look very much like these other characters. So you have to make maybe a little change or something and, you know, kill them off once. And then, hey, you got a character model almost completely done for this other character. And Dave says, oh, we were supposed to kill off Eeth Koth in this episode, but we decided we create all these great characters. And, oh, that's a great character. And then we end up killing them off and we don't have them. It's like, well, you can kill off Eeth Koth and you have Agent Kohler and you're all set. But somehow Dave missed that. So that was pretty much my rebuttal there, that they looked through all these resources and looked and, you know, talked to Leyland Shi and all the people about, you know, Eeth Koth being dead or can I use Eeth Koth or whatever. But somehow they had sort of missed the fact that Agent Kohler is almost exactly the same character.
You know, it's kind of sad that some of these decisions might come down to the money we spent on rendering the model for the character. And my goodness, can't we get at least 6 or 7 episodes out of this guy?
That kind of bothers me. Also, what I was thinking is, these are some creative people. Can't they make a few new Jedi to keep around for the series, similar to Ahsoka, who come back time and again? I mean, even if it was another Zabrak, Darth Maul was such a cool character in his fighting style. Imagine seeing kind of like a Jedi with the fighting abilities of Darth Maul, who may not be too great with all of the Force, but just a really good lightsaber duelist. Somebody who could be taken captive, and we'd all be like, oh, is he really going to die? Because they kill off every other original character in this whole series, and instead have them keep coming back for a while. I don't see why we had to have Adi Gallia and her 40 thieves, and why we had to have Eeth Koth. Why not make up some new people?
Well, Arnie, are you talking more of like Barriss Offee's role, or a completely new character that we've never heard of?
Completely new. Kind of like the Mon Calamari Padawan that Kid Fisto had. That kind of creative for the series, so that way you're not stepping on too many toes and you get to do whatever you want with this character. Make him look really cool. Do something outrageous. Impress me. Be creative. Don't just keep going and, you know, doing basically Tales of the Jedi Council here where, well, there's a background character. Let's give him a story.
It seems like the only interesting new characters that they're actually creating that we actually care about are the children, and the children are never going to die. They're never going to kill a child in these episodes, but it seems like the ones that they're creating that are more interesting. We saw the Twilight children, we saw the Gungan children, but specifically on this, you know, the children really gave me a sense of dread, you know, because part of me knows, like I said, like they're not going to kill the children, but you never know. You know, you're dealing with Grievous here. You know, you're dealing with these commando droids, which I kind of got a Night of the Living Dead from the commando droids in the second one, where they kind of were released into where the children go in, and they were released into the cornfield, and the commando droids were kind of walking around like that. The children were at risk, and I kind of got the suspense in the second episode that we did not get in the first episode, because we know that how these other Jedi die. You know, we know that even when Grievous says this is the end of the story of Obi-Wan Kenobi, I was like, come on, why even put a line like that in there? And we know that's not the case. But just to go back to my point, that the new characters that there are these children that are never going to die. I mean, we did see a Weequay Jedi. We did see another Twi'lek Jedi in the briefing room. And we did see another type of Jedi, plus some younglings. So they are there. They could create these characters, but they just seem to be holding back. Maybe in season 3.
Well, I don't know why you want to see children die in a cartoon, but man, that's cool for you if you want to see that. I don't want anything to do with that. But I do agree with you that they had the Padawans right there in that first episode. Take younglings out. Why were the younglings watching that video, the hologram? Surely when that thing started and you see where it was going, you could have escorted the kids out earlier. So the whole inclusion of kids in this episode, the first episode was completely inappropriate. The second episode with the children, I thought was wonderful. I thought that was great. I didn't understand how a clone and a red Twi'lek has blue Twi'lek children, but I don't know how that works. So maybe it's cool with me. I thought it was really kind of nice, but a little I didn't understand that.
Nathan, if you would.
Please. But
yeah, the whole Cut Laquane thing has caused a lot of a stir. A lot of people saying, wait a second, A, how can the human have children with, or a human clone, whatever, have children with this Twi'lek woman. How long must this war have gone on already for these kids to be this age if they're his kids? Is this the first deserter? All that kind of stuff. To narrow down all the Cutla Quayne issues, one, he may be the first deserter that we've seen continuity-wise, time-wise, in these episodes. There was one named Spar, who becomes a Mandalore, actually, prior to this, but it was before the war ever started. So for the series, outside of the traitor a while back, this may be the first deserter we see. They become a theme, sort of, in the Republic Commando books. Those books also pin down the fact, among others, that Twi'leks and humans can't have children. It was an issue with Lasima and Ateen in those books, which is part of continuity, even if issues with the books are coming with the Mandalorians and such. So that had been decided, which is what caused people to shake their heads even more. But then you read the episode guide, and the episode guide pins down that this is his adopted family. These are not his children by blood. So the time frame no longer is an issue because they were born prior to him being there, probably long enough for the Twi'lek girl's, Twi'lek woman's husband to be killed or sent off somewhere or whatever, and apparently they can have as much booty as they want because they can't have children together. Side benefit of interspecies dating, apparently. But he's not the biological father. It's an adopted family thing. You have to wonder if it ties into the Mandalorian adopting practices and such, but you really sort of get a sense of what the clones could be, which whatever fans may think about the coming clashes between the Clone Wars and the Republic Commando and Imperial Commando books, it is a theme that resonates in both, the idea of clones wanting something more. It just so happened that in this case, it was an adoptive form of something more. And if I may make a quick comment with regard to what we were saying about the characters in peril, when Rex got shot, I was worried. Because as much as Rex shows up in other stuff that takes place after this, in like video games and such, those things are in complete chaos even more than anything else, just about as to when the heck they can take place with regard to the series. So seeing Rex get shot when he's one of the few new characters created for this series actually made me think, uh-oh, maybe he's going to be out of the war for a while, maybe he could actually be dead. I doubted it, but it certainly had more peril than anyone else, including the kids, because we've seen droids juggling kids over lava in this series before.
Well, let's get back to Cut in a second. I do want to comment on Rex. I never thought he was in peril, which is one of the things that made me shake my head, because the shot he took, where he took it, even with armor, and the doctor's like, well, if it was an inch or two over, you'd been dead. Why? The bullet apparently didn't go through him. That really bugged me.
He had a black spot on the back of his back when he sat up. Remember, he had like a mark. Well,
but you know, I assume that was like a bruise. Yeah. And I guess I can imagine if you bruise and had that kind of impact a few inches and hit the heart directly. I get that, but I don't see how that shot didn't cut right through him. I mean, that commando droid wasn't carrying a pistol. But anyway, I just had to gripe about that. Let's talk about Cut for a second. I mean, Nathan, that was really actually fascinating. I did not get any. I didn't know any of that background beforehand. I did think about the interspecies type thing, so I'm glad you cleared that up for me a little bit. But let's talk about Cut, the character, and just kind of the life that he has. I thought it was a really, let me put it this way. When Rex first goes in the farmhouse and they leave him there and they go off and meet up with Obi-Wan, I even actually looked at my wife and I was like, wow, this show has just come to a grinding halt. But then I was actually pretty pleased at where they went with it. What did you guys think about that whole back and forth between Rex and Cut about duty and deserting? It actually made me think of, wow, you know, why doesn't a guy like Cut have a right to make this choice? What do you guys think? What did it do for you?
Oh, my God, that was awesome. This is the part where this whole episode, this whole 2-4 really took off. It was really great. I just love getting this characterization behind the clones and you know, their motivations. Because now, you know, with the clones, you know, we have like Rex, who sees his role in the army as, you know, that it's his choice. It's what he wants to do. He considers his other fellow clones his brothers in arms, stuff like that, which is awesome. But then you get Cut, who decided he thought he was just a nameless cog in a machine fighting for a war he didn't believe in or that made no sense to him, and he wanted more. And I thought it was great that he found it with the adopted family that he had. And then that contrasts with other clones who, you know, that, you know, who turned traitor, selling out for money and stuff like that. And it even builds upon just even with some of the other characterizations where, you know, where a clone knows how to handle a Jedi, how all of that is just coming together to see how really diverse the quote-unquote identical cloned army is, and just even the banter that they were having with, you know, that the fact that they have names and that, well, maybe our superiors think it's more efficient. Like, I don't think the Kaminoans think like that. I mean, it's just completely awesome, and that's one, and that was just really what pulled it through. And just even getting some insight into Rex, he had a really good line. They were talking about, you know, why is Rex in it? And he mentions that he's part of the most pivotal moment in the history of the Republic. If we fall, then our children and their children could be forced to live under an evil I can't well imagine. And realizing what happens with how the Empire comes to be, I mean, that kind of line just sent shivers down my spine. That is just pure awesome. I just love where they're going with it. Fantastic. I want more of this kind of stuff.
I liked it, but my problem was I thought the whole thing was in episode 2 that they said that the clones were bred to be, I can't remember the exact phrase, but less independent. And so I didn't see how a clone could have that. I was actually hoping for some explanation as to how a clone could overcome his genetic programming or something like that. However, that continuity quibble aside, I thought it was great, again, to get a more cerebral episode. To call back to Brain Invaders, this was this episode's cafeteria scene with Barisophi and Ahsoka discussing the Force. I thought that it was great to see some deeper issues talking about it. I just wish it would have been a little bit more fleshed out. It didn't feel like real conversation to me. It felt like a cartoon discussion.
Well, Arnie, what you said about the clones on Kamino having that programmed out of their system, the only explanation I can think of is that maybe Cutla Quain was an ex, the ARC troopers, because the ARC troopers, and I think Republic Commandos also, were allowed the free thinking, so they could actually be in command and not just be a regular clone, like cannon fodder.
Do I have to agree with Arnie on this one? I had a big problem with that in the Republic Commando books. The same thing. I understand they have a separate section, but I always thought they made that separate section so they could have that exception. But we're meant to think that the clones were bred to fight in the army and not do this desertion thing. I love the scenes with the deserter. I love the explanation that it's an adopted family. That makes much more sense to me, although the kids could have had gotten the age multiplying gene from the father. That's why they could be so old at that point. But there's a thousand ways to explain this, but was it entertaining to watch? Absolutely. But I agree with Arnie that they explained how this shouldn't happen. In episode 3, the clones turned on the Jedi, the people they were relying on, like we see in these episodes all through the Clone Wars, that they are friends and we're all good friends, and they all just turn on them because it's in their programming. Programming is programming. So this guy is a faulty program, perhaps. Perhaps something didn't take as well. They all they had to do was explain why here, and it would have been 100% satisfactory. As it is, as Arnie would say, even though an infield double is quite hard to get, it's a solid double to the center field because it really was entertaining to watch.
Here's the thing, though. If you say that this guy had faulty programming or didn't have the programming, then that negates every moment of conversation between Rex and Cut, because Cut can just go, "You poor pathetic thing, you're programmed. I'm not. I'm better." And that ends the moral conversation. The entire thing is dead air if he isn't programmed and Rex is. So you have to, in order for those conversations to carry any dramatic weight, you have to assume that they're equals who have just made a different choice. However, then that goes back to how can they make the choice.
Right.
I would say this can kind of go back to the arrogance, you might say, of the, I guess we're now calling them what, Kaminoans instead of Kaminoans all of a sudden as of the last few months with this and Elite Squadron. It seems like it kind of plays into their arrogance that they think that they could create a human being that is not going to have some spark of independence, that it's kind of part of their sales pitch, but maybe not necessarily something that could happen. It plays into the whole nature versus nurture argument, the idea of programming or what your genetics tell you versus the life experiences that you have as the war goes on and the clones develop more of those individual personalities, like the names, like the tattoos about, like, what was a tattoo? Oh, the only good droid's a dead droid or something that some of them have. I think that's one of the things that Lucas played on a little bit, at least the EU has later played on, is this sort of idea of the contrast between you have this droid army that is soulless, so to speak, this droid army versus a human army, both of which are cannon fodder, and how the Republic you know, the one that's supposed to be standing up for democracy and all this kind of stuff, here they are using human beings as opposed to droids. And this issue of free will slowly starts to come into play. As for Order 66, it's been portrayed as that's a duty issue. They have free will to an extent. You know, they can develop their own personalities, but they have a specific set of contingency orders that are all part of their duty. And if their duty says that the Jedi Order has tried to assassinate or take down the Chancellor, their duty is to assassinate. Their duty is to wipe out that threat, because if they don't, they will not get another shot if we're talking Jedi here. So it's kind of, I see where they're going with that. I see how it can fit sort of the larger scheme of things, but it's definitely a theme that Lucas didn't make as clear in the films as it seems to be being made clear here. And I don't know if that's Filoni's doing, Melching, or whoever's doing it might be, but it certainly seems to be sort of pushing that aspect here within the series.
This clone of Cat that deserted, is that he was in a situation where he was in a ship of, I don't know, 200 or how, I don't know how big a platoon or whatever really is. Of course, we only see like 8 at once or something. But, you know, he was like the only survivor. He was running for his life. And so he's sort of in the situation where he has to, would have to find his way back to the army. It's not like they're going to be there. Hey, I don't know if he has any way of communicating with them. I don't know exactly where he was. He didn't get shot down and where he's running to. You know, he's running and somehow ends up Seleukumii, or whatever the name of that planet is, and meets this girl or whatever. And he's like, I'll do this instead of going back to the army. I mean, he has this program and he's trained to do all this stuff, but he's like, you know, and I guess it's really odd though, because it's right after Geonosis. So he hasn't really gotten to experience a lot of the real world, hasn't really seen the real world, but still he's out there in a situation where he's by himself and he's alone and he's run away from the army in this battle. And he just, instead of trying to go back to, I don't know, where would you go? Kamino, of course. I don't know where you would go and how you would get there if you're a clone. Say, hey, I'm in the army. I need to get somewhere. But so he ends up at this other place. And it seems possible that even though he has this duty to the army, the people that he has a duty to are all dead, he feels. And he goes off. It seems believable. You know, you don't really need the programming. You know, Rex has had people die around me, but not like your entire battalion. And there's a little bit of a difference in that, I think.
Well, yeah, I thought with the programming, and to steal a line from Jurassic Park, I mean, nature will find a way. You can maybe explain it away as far as that goes. And there just seems to be a lot of, I'm not sure if it's a dichotomy or irony or whatever it is, but you have both, and Nathan mentioned this a bit, where you have, you know, the clone army bred, you know, to be, you know, identical and follow orders and have programming. And you have the droid army, which is, which is constructed and quote unquote soulless and supposed to follow orders. But yet both entities, either be it through, you know, their own, you know, humanity developing personalities, or through just bad, not having enough memory wipes, changing some AI, how you get the emerging personalities and intelligences of each army, and just how things cannot be fully controlled or contained in all instances as well as they would like. And maybe deserter. I didn't have a problem with the fact that it would have gone against his quote unquote programming. That was just never an issue for me. I'm surprised it threw a monkey wrench into so many of other people's. But you know, it's also an aspect I haven't thought of. So I thought that was some pretty good conversation that way.
I was just going to say, just to close out the point of, for me, on the him being a deserter in the programming. This, would the clones have any more harder programming than the Jedi would growing up? You know, the Jedi are programmed to do this, this, and this, and this, but we have case after case after case of Jedi going against what they've learned. The main thing that comes up to my mind is Yoda going into hiding and sending Obi-Wan into hiding. You know, there's some circumstances of why he had to do that, but, you know, Jedi are supposed to be able to sacrifice themselves, you know, for the greater good. And you could say that the clones are programmed, but once you have, you know, there's certain life experiences and you start finding things that make you happy, you know, it kind of changes things. So I really didn't have a problem with that either, for me.
This episode made me realize how easy it is for clones to go completely AWOL. I mean, unless you're working with clones every day and you know their facial features, there, and a clone goes AWOL, you have literally no way of tracking them down. I mean, somebody could see your face and realize, hey, he's a clone, but the Clone Wars aren't over, and probably rat you out. But like Cut did, you could just go to like a random farm, start a family, and then just never be bothered again. That's how much of the army has been doing that? And if this is the first point, the first part where it happens, we're only in the first year of the war, considering the clones are still using the Phase 1 armor. The war goes on for about 3 years. Like I said before, how much of the army is doing this? And that could also be a contributor as to why the war lasts so long against these moronic battle droids.
Well, I think it's good to point out, I guess, David, what you're saying too, is that if his platoon was thought to have been totally cut up and he just escaped, and I'm guessing he has some above normal skills because of the way he takes out commando droids. I mean, I had a little bit of a problem with that, although it was really cool animation and cool action. I mean, if 20 commando droids were heading towards that house and he took out most of them and Rex took out a few, but so maybe there's something a little bit unique about him to where he's a little bit more independent thinking. He was smart enough to escape under the radar and just, you know, has found a life. One of the things I had a little bit of a problem with, I found myself starting to dislike Rex a little bit because Rex was very much like, well, I'm going to have to rat you out. It's my duty. I got to turn you in. You're a coward. You're this. He obviously had the change of heart, which was nice, which kind of makes me wonder, okay, what character development are we starting to see for Rex and where is this going to take Rex? Is Rex going to do something to take himself out of the army? You know, obviously we don't see him or his anything around Anakin at all in episode 3. Is there some way that they're starting to slowly write Rex out of, not out of the show, but out of at least giving him reason for not being in episode 3? I don't know. It just caused a lot of intrigue for me. I think it was kind of clever that they did it.
With regard to the idea of clones, you know, how there can be tons and tons of deserters out there or AWOL clones out there, there is sort of the running theme in the, at least in the Republic Commando books and elsewhere, the idea that clones who go AWOL are essentially hunted down. They're hunted down and taken out because of the fact that essentially they're a resource gone rogue as opposed to an individual making that decision. And even then, you know, you wait till your tour is up. You don't just go AWOL as if these guys have a tour that could be up. But on the issue of them, you know, how easy it would be for a clone to go AWOL, bear in mind, part of this comes back to the idea of you've got to know that there is something better to seek that something better. If these clones live just the clone life and, you know, they've been programmed and all that sort of thing, but their experiences stay within the ranks, stay within their duty, you probably won't have as many going AWOL. Cut is an unusual situation because Cut winds up in a position where his training is of no use anymore. He now has to figure out how to survive on that planet. He has to figure out how to deal with relations with the people who are there, eventually this woman and her children, and eventually sort of creating a family around that. He's a clone who is cut off from all of his normal input. So now he has to learn to deal with this new stimuli, so to speak. I don't think the idea of AWOL clones becoming a frequent thing is something that'd be much of a concern, at least not from a context standpoint, looking at the rest of the EU and the series around this episode. Though the possibility of Rex having that out is interesting. They created an out for Ahsoka a while back in one of the comics that she and Anakin basically promised themselves that when the war is over, they'll hunt down and stop slavery in the Republic. Maybe Ahsoka will do that someday. I like them laying those little seeds. I doubt it's going to come to much fruition, but at least the context is there both for that and for keeping the deserter numbers to a minimum.
Okay, guys. I think we've actually talked some of the main points of the show. I did want to open it up, though. We don't have a preview for next week to talk about, which I guess what I'm reading on the forums is that we're not going to have another episode until the 22nd, in which case you can be certain that following Sunday we will be back here at RepublicForces.com for the live chat. But before we sign off, just want to go down the list, and if you guys had any, you know, last comments or maybe some brief topics that you just wanted to discuss.
Yeah, I had one comment that was really a big comment I think we could discuss is, why exactly are these commando droids attacking them? I mean, you're like 8 or, I don't remember, you know, 10 to 20, how many there really were. But, you know, these two little kids, these two little Twi'leks running to this house. So these commando droids run to this house and break the door down and start shooting. And I didn't really quite understand, other than for the story purpose, why they would do that. Why would these commando droids be sort of destroying this simple family? It didn't really necessarily make sense to me. I guess it could be their program is just to destroy all humans and life and something, but that doesn't really seem like that would make terrible sense. But other than that, I really did like the episodes.
Okay, Dave, good.
I love these episodes. Actually, having heard that those are his adoptive kids, that clears up so many points I had about the children. However, I do have one last thing about it. Let's say, hypothetically, the Republic won the Clone Wars and it doesn't become the Republic, and the clones are out of the army. The Republic army is done with. can the clones start families? Because on Earth, when we clone animals, those animals are always born infertile. They cannot reproduce. Now, is it ever mentioned in anything that the clones are able to reproduce? Or is it just assumed that they can or they can't? Or what's the deal
with that? Are you talking about in the Clone Wars cartoons, or are you talking about in the EU? Because in the EU, there is a child of a Jedi and a clone that is a major factor in the Republic Commando and Imperial Commando and later Legacy of the Force books.
Okay, because I was just talking in general. Okay, because I've only read the first of the Republic Commando books, and just knowing that the clones are able to reproduce, that clears up a lot.
Okay, Nathan?
Two continuity quickies. One, we see Saleucami here, which is kind of cool because that's the story that is one of the last stories in the EU before Revenge of the Sith, right around the time actually of Obsession on Boz Pity, is the Siege of Saleucami, where Quinlan Vos is, and it is both of those, the Saleucami battle in the Republic comics and Boz Pity in Obsession, they get mentioned by Obi-Wan Kenobi in Revenge of the Sith, kind of the mopping up action on Boz Pity and such. So it's kind of cool to see that. The second thing, there's the character of Commander Wolf, who comes back here. He showed up in Rising Malevolence initially, and here he shows up again, also with Plo Koon in the hologram, only now he has a cybernetic eye. And we haven't been told exactly when he gets or how he gets that cybernetic eye, but he's shown up in one other story, which is the comic series In Service of the Republic. And in that, he removes his helmet, no cybernetic eye, it's still a normal one. That may present issues for Leland Chi in trying to put all this stuff in order, because that story, that comic, already has its own contradiction, saying that it's about a year after Geonosis, and yet still within 22 BBY. It's actually, at most, it's more like 9 or 10 months after Geonosis. But if that's before he gets a cybernetic eye, they could be dealing with this episode somehow having to be set about a year later and all this kind of stuff. My guess is they're going to dump it. This episode is yet another case for why they will very likely take any date references, not only in the old Republic materials or the old Clone Wars materials, but also from the new stuff they're still putting out right now, some of which is written by the TV writers, and just dump all the dates they come up with them, because otherwise this stuff isn't all going to make sense, apparently even with their own spinoff materials. So it'll be interesting to see how and when Commander Wolf's injury is finally explained.
Okay, very interesting. Jason?
I guess some things that I didn't really hit on too much, and there's probably not much to really discuss about it, but I kind of felt like these two arcs were kind of like how Arnie felt about landing at Point Rain, where there was just a lot of action with no real plot. I mean, there was the whole, you know, Grievous was free at the start of the episode, you know, he was still free at the end, there wasn't any real advancement in the war, or in just overall plot, or just, you know, the where characters were from a point A to point B type situation. And there, whenever Grievous fights a main Jedi like Kenobi, there doesn't really seem to be that kind of tension. But to balance out those kind of negatives, you know, I still thought there was some really good characterizations, as we've mentioned, between, you know, just the bantering. We're getting some insights into Grievous. We're seeing different sides of Kenobi. We're getting a lot more insight into the clones. And just overall, I mean, a lot of people mentioned their opening remarks. And yeah, I really did like the animation and just the lighting effects, especially in the second episode with the sunlight coming over the sunlight over the planet and all the moonlight effects. It was just, they're really hitting the nail on the head as far as all that goes. And, you know, maybe I want a little bit more to happen with Grievous. Maybe I want to see something happen where something of consequence happened to the war. Maybe I've just been spoiled for some of the previous episodes we've got. But as far as it goes, yeah, this was definitely a bunch of solid episodes. And I really thought the second half ended really strong for me, and that's what I'm really looking forward to. And I enjoy it and hope to see more of it.
Okay, Brock?
Basically echoing what Jason said about content over what we have, I honestly think I had a really good time watching these episodes, and my complaints are few but real. And what's interesting to me is I couldn't stop noticing the great angles and the lighting and the action direction. I love in the second episode when they were protecting the home with Rex and the other guy whose name I just forgot, how cool those scenes were, and it was kind of like they're coming through the window, they're coming through the doors, going upstairs. I thought that was really well written and directed, and it's fun to watch. So the lighting, the direction, the animation, all the technical stuff in these episodes were solid to me. So I had a chance to really focus on what was going on and not be distracted by wonky walking or whatever. So overall entertaining, worth watching. These two were definitely worth watching. And so what else is there to say besides what we talked about? It certainly is a good two episodes.
Okay, Barrett?
Just my closing thoughts on the episode is that I really enjoy these two episodes. I mean, like I said before, they've really got over the hump on the animation part. You really don't have any complaints about the animation anymore. I really enjoyed was the whole fact of the droids running out of power. You know, they really don't touch in too much of droids actually running out of power. I mean, you can shut them off depending on what you blow up or the command ship or whatever, but I really enjoyed the fact of them running out of power and Grievous just abusing them. As far as the characterization goes, I really enjoyed it. Explain to me why Grievous hates the Jedi, or that he does hate the Jedi now, so it kind of has a new focus for me as far as he's concerned. I liked all of the new clones. I mean, I can't wait for the action figures to come out, you know, with the clone with the Imperial tattoo on his face. Give me Cut. Give me the captain with the burn mark on his chest. I mean, you know, I'm very excited about what's going to come out of just these two episodes as far as action figures and what I can do to build my collection. But I can't say enough good things about what's going on with these episodes. I mean, they're just getting better and better and better. And hopefully when we see a Bosk, when we see some Mandos come into the episodes, that all of what we've been expecting will be fulfilled. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm a happy camper every time one of these things come on. And I can just watch them over and over. I'm just happy, and I can't wait to see you guys in another 3 weeks, talk with you guys, and it's good to be back.
Okay, you know, my final thought, really enjoyed these episodes. I was able to sit down and just go right through these episodes and really, really enjoyed it. I was a little nervous when Rex got hurt. At first, I thought that was going to be, you know, sidetracking the episode a little bit, but I think they pulled it out pretty well. In terms of new, you know, I don't really have anything new to add other than one thing I constantly get a little disappointed about, and it's not a big deal, but whenever they talk about an hour-long program, I hate the fact that you get a break in between the episodes that kind of, like, stops the momentum. I wish, and I'm sure they don't know at the time that they're making the episodes because of the episode order versus the production order, or airing order, rather, that when they actually show these two episodes, that they'll do them together. But I'd like to see if they're going to do an hour episode, do an hour episode where I need the whole hour to get through a single story, you know, kind of like the movies type thing, to give you a little bit more of an expansive episode, more so than it's an hour-long special, but really all we're really saying is we're going to give you two different episodes. They're kind of tied together, but episode, you know, the 9 o'clock episode is about X, and the 9:30 episode is about Y. I think it'd be kind of cool if they went there, but let's see if that happens. So overall, I guess what we think is going to happen, I don't know if we have confirmation on this, but think what's going to happen is that we do not have another episode on Cartoon Network until January 22nd. And if, you know, that's kind of a bummer, I guess, that we're going to be 3 weeks out, but certainly check on the forums at republicforces.com, but check that out for sure to learn more about the roundtables. If you want to be a part of it, definitely contact show@republicforces.com and let us know. And we will for sure be back here at republicforces.com on the 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard for the live chat then. Gentlemen, I appreciate everybody being on the roundtable. I think we had a great discussion, and I want to thank everyone who joined us in the chat. Hope you had a good time, and we will talk to you guys next time. All right, see ya.
Bye.
Great.
I'd like to thank everyone who joined the roundtable this week. Remember to check back on Sunday, January 24th at 9 p.m. at republicforces.com to participate in the chat for the next episode of Clone Wars. If you'd like to be part of the next roundtable, please contact us at show@republicforces.com. Before we go, I want to remind everyone who pulled this week's episode off the Star Wars Action News feed that this will be the very last episode you can get this way. Be sure to go to republicforces.com or subscribe to Republic Forces Radio Network through iTunes so that you don't miss a single episode of our Clone Wars review. Well, I'm Jerry, and we'll see you next time. So long.
This has been the Republic Forces Radio Network, your source for Clone Wars coverage. Please visit our website at republicforces.com to join in our forums and find out more about the show.
For more Star Wars podcasts, listen to Star Wars Action News, your source for Star Wars collecting, news, reviews, and updates. Star Wars Action News can be found at swactionnews.com. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2008. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains is trademarked and copyright Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. Republic Forces Radio Network, your Clone Wars news leader.
And here's another thing I just happened to notice. When Grievous is boarding Obi-Wan's ship, he uses all four lightsabers to cut the hole. And you know it's the lightsabers because you see two blue tips and two green tips. And the clones are standing right there. When the door opens, Grievous is all the way down the hallway. Did he open the door and then run down the hallway just to have a dramatic entrance?
Right. And then the first time when he's cutting into Eeth Kotz, you know, he steps through the door and puts his hands, "I'm Grievous," and nobody takes a blaster shot at him, which is, I found very interesting. So both of those scenes were kind of like, huh?